Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Harris Cherokee Resort. Find us online at caesars.com/harris-cherokee.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, coming up later on in today's show, and it's really just a couple of minutes from right now, I'm going to play some audio that we typically would not play in a situation like this. I'm going to play a little audio of New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady. Now, you may say, well, Brady's got nothing to do with Georgia, and he doesn't. However, there was something that Brady said coming off a win for the Patriots on Sunday that I thought, oh my gosh, that's a perfect statement about the current state of affairs for UGA as well. And like I said, it's kind of an unlikely source, but coming up in a couple of minutes, I think you'll see where I'm going with this. Brady on his own offense, how that relates to UGA. We'll get to that here in a moment on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Before that, though, let me begin with a compliment. And it's a pretty big, bold compliment for UGA. And the reason I want to share it with you right now is not just because it's kind of interesting to hear an SEC network analyst saying good things about Georgia, but how much what the analyst Marcus Spears says, how much it kind of flies in direct contrast to so much of what you're hearing in else other corners of the TV world, the internet world, when it comes to Georgia right now. On the show, which is Thinking Out Loud, which is a show that Spears does with another analyst, Greg McElroy, he gets some very nice things to say about Georgia as captured by 24/7 Sports. Here's what Spears says. That Georgia is the toughest team to play in the conference. I know people's eyebrows are going to raise like, oh my gosh, don't you see LSU putting up 50 points against Georgia? Well, Georgia's the toughest team to play in the SEC, Marcus Spears says, because of the quality of ball they can play. Now, they've had their moments this season where Jake Fromm's not been great, and people look at him throwing for 100 yards. Georgia, he says, this is Marcus Spears, literally is going in the game saying, we're going to impose our will on you and see if you can sustain for four quarters. This was the best front seven they're going to probably play all year, and Derrick Brown was unstoppable. He's referencing the Auburn game this past Saturday. And Marcus Spears says, you know what Georgia said? We're still going to hand it off. We're still giving our running backs an opportunity. We're still going to rush for 100 yards. That's the SEC network analyst Marcus Spears touting Georgia as the toughest team to play in the SEC as captured by 24/7 Sports. Now, the fact that Spears is an LSU graduate, and it was seen on one of those ESPN shows last week, being very proud of LSU post-Alabama, the fact that he's now saying this about Georgia, I think kind of makes it even more interesting. And I know that for a certain pocket of Georgia fans, this will kind of come across as a little bit of hollow praise because they are more worried about the lack of the consistent week-to-week passing game and even really lack of consistent down-to-down passing game than they are impressed right now with Georgia imposing its will against Auburn. I thought Auburn was a great win for UGA, even though UGA didn't necessarily play great throughout the full game. I guess I kind of find myself more in agreement than not with Spears, but for a certain pocket of Georgia fans, they kind of want a little bit more than what Georgia brought to the table against Auburn. And even if that's not my point of view currently, I at least kind of understand where it's coming from. But you can't discount the notion and the way in which that Spears describes the situation, that Georgia is one of those, as Kirby Smart has said it before, kind of stubborn run first teams. And in the SEC, that mentality probably helps. And the fact that Georgia, even against an elite defense, especially elite front seven, the fact that Georgia still maintained its intent to go out there and run the football in that situation, I think that does kind of say something about the will of Georgia and its desire to impose that will on other teams. And, you know, listen, the rest of the way, either because of the venue or where the game's going to be played, not in a hostile stadium, or against a defense likely not quite as good as Auburn's, it gets a little easier for Georgia the rest of the way. And the good news about that is that might open the door for Georgia to do, even in the running game, a little bit more than it did against Auburn, maybe getting some more explosive runs. You know, Kirby Smart said this past week that, or I should say this week, he has said that he felt like against Auburn, they were actually maybe a little closer to getting some of that than some people realize. But as Marcus Spears points out, against a good front seven, it's just kind of hard to do. Here's what Kirby said about it.
You know, there's several runs the other day that were close. They were good runs. They just weren't super explosive where we got to the second level. Some of that's the back end. Some of that's you don't create the angles when all the extra guys are in the box. You contribute to a lot of things. I contributed to good defense. You know, when I think of Auburn and you turn on that tape, they run to the ball. They hit. They tackle. They got really good lot better than people even thought, corners, and they're physical up front. So got a good football team, and so does Missouri, guys. I mean, you start looking at it, they got good football teams in our conference, and, I mean, look at us defensively. You're not giving up a lot of explosive runs either. So across the board, it's tough to do that, and we're certainly trying to find ways to create those advantageous situations. But I just know our conference is very defensive when it comes to rankings and statistics. There's a lot of good teams in it.
Let me kind of wrap all this up this way. I totally get there's a degree of skepticism among some Georgia fans with the current state of the Georgia offense. We're going to get more into that coming up in just a moment here. But from Marcus Spears, especially given the fact he is an LSU grad and certainly proud of what LSU is doing this season, what he said on the SEC Network this week for me is not hollow praise. Not the best team necessarily, not the biggest challenge, but the toughest team to play. I think toughest, that word that Spears uses, kind of rings true there. I don't think that's hollow praise at all. I think that's the brand that Georgia's established itself as you head towards this college football playoff race. And of all those teams kind of competing for those top four spots and eventually to be the national champion, I don't know that anyone embodies toughness right now more so than Georgia does. Georgia's not perfect. There are some things as far as the overall profile that it doesn't have, but toughness it does have, and good for Marcus Spears for kind of pointing that out. All right, let me kind of shift gears and mention something else here for a moment. As I mentioned before, the college football playoff top 25 came out again last night. I made my case on yesterday's show for Georgia being number 3 out of Clemson. I also predicted that the committee wouldn't do that, but that's the right thing to do. Georgia now has 3 teams in the top 15, which it has beaten. That's a pretty good resume Georgia's putting together, but the Dogs did remain 4th last night. I guess the good news is they didn't move down, although no one expected that they would. The bad news is, based on the commentary of the ESPN guys on the set and based on the committee chairman Rob Mullins, there was never any really serious consideration of reshuffling the top 4. So this idea that it's a new ranking every week and that they start from scratch every single week, at least based on the way this was talked about last night, that was not indeed the case. And for the most part, the 3 teams ahead of Georgia were kind of rubber stamped back there in that spot once again. But nonetheless, being 4 right now is not such a bad place to be. It means that if Georgia wins out, it is obviously going to be in the college football playoff when it's all said and done. As far as how Rob Mullins says the committee evaluated UGA coming into this week, Mike Griffith's got a piece up that at DogNation.com. You can read about that. What Mullen says about Georgia is there was a lot of discussion for teams 4 through 6. That's Georgia and that's Alabama, and then you kind of get into the Oregon-Utah stuff a little bit after that. He says that Georgia added to their resume with an impressive win at Auburn. So obviously touting Georgia for the resume-building win against Auburn, but not necessarily doing too much in the evaluation process of that overall. And, you know, listen, obviously the seeding in this matters to me, that if Georgia makes the playoff, there's a much bigger advantage to being in Atlanta for the Peach Bowl, which you probably have to be the number 1 seed to do, more so than being out in Arizona, which no one's turning down a spot in the playoff, but that's obviously a bigger travel challenge than getting a chance to play a game in your home state. But for right now, the committee's not really evaluating, it would seem, on the basis of that kind of stuff. But this is one of those things where, listen, it's better to be in the playoff discussion, especially solidly in the mix with the way that Georgia is right now, than it is not to be. And for Georgia, they kind of find themselves back in the spot again, once again, for kind of the 3rd straight year that Georgia has been right here on the cusp of being in the college football playoff and hope to return there for the first time since 2017. The mental part of how Kirby Smart handles all of this, I also thought that was interesting this week in terms of what his message is to his team. You know, obviously, he's told us over and over again that he tries not to pay attention to that kind of stuff, but he acknowledges the fact that the players themselves are going to notice the conversation that's being had around them. Here is Kirby on how his players handle the playoff race.
They're going to see it. They're going to hear it. What you try to emphasize is the facts. Here are the facts. If we block and tackle people, we're pretty good. You know what I mean? If we block and tackle people, if we do simple better, we're pretty good. If we don't, and we turn the ball over, and we don't play well on special teams, and we give up big explosive plays, we're not very good. So what's going to allow me to do those things? None of the other stuff matters. None of it matters. So, you know, if you get their focus on playing better and getting better, especially the second part of your roster, because we got 2s that are having to play now. And so now this week, more 2s are going to have to play. The next week, maybe more 2s are going to play because you got more guys getting injured. So how do I get the rest of my roster better is really all we focus on.
So let me see if I can wrap all of this up here as a part of our program here today. It sounds like what Kirby Smart said there, that they've got a pretty good mental approach about how they're taking this on, the race to the college football playoffs. And there's no doubt Georgia's presence in this debate right now, Georgia's presence in this discussion is fueled by what Marcus Spears spoke about, the toughness that Georgia brings to the table. That's not just a physical toughness, it's a mental toughness as well, knowing that every game the rest of the way for Georgia is likely must win, including Texas A&M this Saturday. And the good news is, based on what we've already seen from Georgia in big games thus far this season, I don't think this UGA team's going to shy away from that challenge, not against LSU or Texas A&M or anything else in between. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort. It's great to have you with us on video, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio, on 960 The Ref in Athens, or in a podcast form pretty much wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have you with us today, and really appreciate Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort for bringing it all to you. Two great locations for them. I'm talking about the original Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort and Harrah's Cherokee Valley River. Wonderful gaming facilities at both these places. Also fantastic, well-appointed hotel rooms, including a Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort. They've got over 1,100 rooms. This is a giant resort facility. 10 dining options, spa, you know, everything else to make it kind of a world-class getaway for you. That's what Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort provides. And pretty soon, they're also going to provide something brand new. The opening of the book, that's right, sports gaming is coming to Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resorts by the end of this year. Fantastic facility to kind of get in there, a kind of a man cave, you know, sort of sports basement type thing where you can watch the games and get action down on the games. If you're watching on video, you see the address on your screen for this. If you're listening radio podcast, just do me a favor, search this. Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort, the book, sports book. And when you search that, you're going to find that and see everything that's going on there and be ready to go for sports gaming coming to the Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resorts here very soon. Great to have them as a part of the program here today. It's Mike Griffith later on. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse. It's brought to you today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And I told you before, I want to play for you in just a moment a little bit of audio of Tom Brady. And Brady, the Patriots quarterback, is not typically a name we would mention here on Dog Nation Daily, just given the fact that he's an NFL guy and we talk college football. But to me, this is appropriate because, listen, there continues to be this debate going on nationally among the media, and you can cite all kinds of examples of that on social media or in television, whatever else. But even within the kind of boundaries of Dog Nation, Georgia fans themselves, does Georgia have enough offense to win a national championship? And even when it comes to a great win against Auburn, was there enough offense in this game to actually make you feel good about Georgia going forward the rest of the way? And heavens knows, here in our program, we've kind of had our turn on this, and I've been skeptical, but kind of turned the page over the last couple of weeks of saying, hey, you know, let's just let this play out. Let's just kind of find out if Kirby's philosophy and the way that the talent that Georgia currently has is being deployed. Let's just kind of find out by watching the games if it's truly going to be good enough. Now, as you might imagine, the subject of offense, the presence of it, the lack of it, did come up with Kirby Smart again this week. And as a way of kind of sort of beginning this conversation, let me let you hear a little bit of Kirby Smart on the subject.
Each guy on our offense is, I guarantee they're giving the best they can. They've had great practices. We go against them good on good. I see them make good plays. It just hasn't come to fruition in a game, at least not against Auburn as often as we'd like. We had good drives, and I thought that our offensive staff did a really good job. The three touchdowns we had were all plays that they came up with and designed and had for Auburn. They weren't every game plays. They were plays that were meant to help us against Auburn, and they did.
So, listen, I think if you're a Georgia fan, there's a certain degree of, what do you do with this? Do you celebrate the touchdowns that Georgia scored at the expense of not being too worried about the threes and out that Georgia collected by the seemingly handful on Saturday? Or do you worry so much about those offensive miscues and those drives that never quite got started that you miss the fact that Georgia kind of got a pretty impressive win against a very good defense on Saturday? I think it's difficult to kind of wrestle with that about what the right approach for a fan is in terms of where Georgia is, knowing that it's about to try to compete for national championship against some teams that are really scoring a lot. And this is where Tom Brady comes in, because on Sunday, the Patriots won against the Eagles, but it was not a good offensive performance. Was it 17-10? Was that the final score Saturday? 17-10 for the Patriots against the Eagles. And Brady was talking about that post game, and it's going to be hard for you to hear the question, but the questioner says, hey, are you worried about your offense right now? And what Brady says in response to that, I believe, is exactly how Georgia fans should feel, but the current state of affairs for their favorite team as well. So here's Tom Brady on his team, but relevant for Georgia as well. Take a listen to this.
up and down. That's what it looks like to me. So, yeah, we'd probably do everything better.
Are you concerned about the offense? Do you feel like it's something that's going to work its way out?
I don't think it matters what I think. It matters what we do.
I mean, isn't that perfect? Are you concerned about your offense right now? What do you think about it? Brady, the consummate veteran, says, it doesn't matter what I think. It simply matters what we do. And I believe for Georgia, it's the exact same thing. Hey, do you think Georgia's got enough offense to match wits with Jimbo Fisher on Saturday? Doesn't matter what I think. It simply matters what Georgia does. Hey, do you think that Georgia in the SEC championship game, given the fact that LSU is scoring like 50 points a game, does Georgia have enough offense for that game? Doesn't matter what I think. It simply matters what Georgia does. We are all about to go on a ride. And we're going to find out one thing or the other. We're going to find out that Georgia's defense is so good that these high-powered offenses don't look quite the same on the same field against UGA because of how tough the UGA defense is. We also may find out against somewhat lesser defenses, which for the most part Georgia will play the rest of the way, that all of a sudden the offense suddenly looks better. However, there's a pocket of Georgia fans that says, I don't think that's going to be true. I think this sputtering offense we've seen in some other games, I think that's going to show up when it matters most, and I think it's going to keep Georgia from winning the SEC championship or anything else like that. You may be right, but for now, it doesn't matter what you think, whether you think it's good enough or whether you think it's a problem or you think you don't even know. Right now, it doesn't matter what any of us thinks. It just simply matters what Georgia does. So from now on, we'll just simply be judging these results. Saturday against Texas A&M and everything beyond that. I think Tom Brady, even though he was speaking about his own team, I think that message is pretty relevant for Georgia all the way around. It's Around the Doghouse. It's presented by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And solution is the word that matters there in that name, because when it comes to a cracked foundation or water coming into your house somewhere, especially your basement or your crawl space, that's a problem. And when you have a problem, you want a solution, and Engineered Solutions of Georgia can provide sometimes simple solutions to these kinds of things. And if that's the case, then ESOG is going to tell you exactly how to fix it. But let's face it, when it comes to foundation issues for something as valuable of an asset as your house is, sometimes those issues are more complicated to fix. When that's the case, it's another reason to trust ESOG, because Engineered Solutions of Georgia has two full-time engineers on staff. That's why we trust them. They also offer a fully transferable triple protection warranty, which is on materials, installation, and design. So here's the number to dial. Dial 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. Dial that number. Get in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And, of course, it's great to have them as a part of Around the Doghouse. It's also great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. I'll have more from Kirby Smart later on in the program. But for now, on the look back at Auburn, look ahead to Texas A&M, and a little bit of a preview of the SEC Championship as well, let's talk to Mike Griffith here. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We'll say hello to Mike Griffith. Good stuff from him last night on DogNation.com, recapping the playoff race and Georgia back at number four again. You know, Mike, I enjoyed your piece last night, quote from Rob Mullins, and I made my case yesterday that I think from a resume standpoint, you could arguably put Georgia at number three right now ahead of Clemson, just based on the fact that the ACC for a second consecutive week only had one team ranked in the top 25. It was obviously the Tigers. Certainly seems like, based on the commentary from the ESPN folks and frankly Mullins and the selection committee itself, they didn't pay any serious attention to moving anybody around within the top four, which I guess is their prerogative for the moment. What did you make of the deliberations? What did you make of where Georgia was, and kind of after adding another resume may win, how it's keeping pace for the national elite for the moment?
You know, the old question, you know, do you judge the team on the wins or the losses? And I guess it comes down to what you want for college football. And, you know, I can't really blame Clemson, because, you know, they do play two SEC teams. This year they played A&M, and they've got their annual game with South Carolina. So it's not like Clemson's not scheduling decent teams out of conference. But the league, it's so down, in fact, you know, there's a real quandary. You know, Connor and I talked about it last night. I'm sure you probably touched on it. I mean, the Orange Bowl, if Clemson's in the playoff, who are they going to have? They're contracted to take an ACC team. There's nobody ranked. So that's, you know, good luck on Virginia Tech with four. I don't know. So I thought the rankings were fair. And you know, the thing they did that I liked, and I'll give them credit for, is they didn't drop Alabama yet. And now, I'll admit, I did in my poll, but they didn't just assume that Alabama's not going to be as good without Tua. They said, you know what, it was still a convincing win. And, you know, we're going to evaluate them based on that game. Now, the next game Alabama plays Western Carolina, you know, I don't know how much of a, you know, standard that is to judge a team by. But certainly when Alabama plays Auburn, we'll find out if they're deserving of their number five ranking. I happen to think that a one-loss Pac-12 team would probably pass by Alabama in the rankings. And should Georgia lose, either to Texas A&M or LSU, I suppose, then I would think that one-loss Pac-12 team could be the fourth team instead of a one-loss Alabama.
Yeah, that's kind of my take on this, too, is that I think last night, I'm going to talk more about this later on in the program, but I think last night Alabama got a lot of attention because there wasn't a lot else going on. In other words, you had to have some drama for the TV show, so discussing Alabama's presence in these rankings was a way of kind of creating some debate and some mystery, where otherwise things, for the most part, were kind of paint by numbers. I do think that the way that ESPN discussed this last night, at least from my opinion, and obviously I'm wrong all the time, but to my opinion, the way that Alabama was discussed last night was misleading. I think the TV folks last night, maybe even Rob Mullins himself, would have you believe that Alabama is still very much alive as a number five team, and that if Georgia were to win the SEC, it might open the door for Alabama to make it in as a second SEC team. The truth is, I've given you my opinion on this before. I believe that the committee wants college football to be a national sport, which means you need all five of your Power Five conferences to be included in the discussion and have that be the case. I believe if there is a reasonable choice out of the Pac-12, whether it be Oregon or Utah, I believe they'll take it. Now, it's a tougher argument if it's Oregon, just because Oregon lost to Auburn, and at least, you know, a handful of SEC teams are going to be able to say the opposite of that. But nonetheless, that's what I believe the committee is going to do here, because this is a relevant discussion for UGA fans, by the way, because while Georgia loves the idea of winning the SEC and getting back the college football playoff, there would at least be some curiosity to that if a Georgia win also ushered the chance for a 2017 redo where Alabama once again makes the playoff as a non-SEC champion. So, you know, the Alabama storyline is at least somewhat relevant for UGA because these two things would seemingly be pretty intertwined at the moment.
Yeah. You know, I hesitate to draw on precedent with this committee, BA, because of what happened last year and the way Georgia was left out. And it wasn't the four best. It turned out to be the four most deserving, with Oklahoma winning their league. But this committee has already shown us this year that they're willing to overlook head-to-head. I mean, they moved Penn State back ahead to Minnesota, and they both have one loss because they said that Penn State has a better resume. So while you may have that transitive property there with Auburn, and we're trying to discuss a one-loss Oregon versus a one-loss Bama, they would make the argument quickly that Oregon had a better overall resume. Because I, like you, think the committee wants to see, you know, more conferences involved, and that's what the really, let's just say it, that's what the TV people want, and they have all the money, and that's why we have a system like this, so it can be manipulated for television matchups. So if you want to know what's going to happen, then follow the dollar and follow the TV ratings, because that's going to tell you who's going to make the playoff and what the matchups will be.
Hey, I've got more questions for Mike Griffith here coming up. Before that, I got something really, really exciting to tell you about. The legendary former UGA coach and athletic director Vince Dooley, the guy who's had Dooley Field named after him here this year, he's going to be doing a book signing tour at some upcoming Kroger locations around the metro Atlanta area. So let me kind of give you the dates here. This is a great way to get ready for the holidays. How about an autographed book from Vince Dooley for that special someone in your life? I've had a chance to talk to Coach Dooley about some of the books that he's written, and his passion for these subjects is tremendous. So here are a couple of the dates to kind of keep in mind here. It's Wednesday, November the 27th. That's the kickoff event. It's going to be at the Kroger in Gainesville, 1931 Jesse Jewell Parkway in Gainesville, from 4 to 6 p.m. Then it's going to be Rome after that, Marietta, Dalton, Dallas, Macon, Buford, Bonaire, Cumming, and Woodstock. So a whole bunch of locations for you to chance to see Coach Dooley, get a book signed as a great holiday gift, or frankly just for yourself. So that begins Wednesday, November 27th, from 4 to 6 p.m. there at the Kroger on Jesse Jewell Parkway in Gainesville, my hometown, by the way. We'll have more details for you on this at dognation.com, but just be aware that over the course of the holiday season to come, big time book signing about to go down with the legendary former coach of the Georgia Bulldogs, Vince Dooley. Mike, let's turn our attention here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort, to the Texas A&M game on Saturday. Boy, it's been pretty clear that Kirby Smart's tried to deliver a narrative on this, starting with his post-game press conference on Saturday. We're focused on A&M. We're focused on A&M. Anytime he was asked about postseason stuff, winning the SEC East, he kind of pivoted back towards the Aggies on Saturday. That's obviously continued with his press conferences the last couple of weeks here. He's he's pretty focused on Texas A&M. And for me, that's easy to understand. You look at A&M overall, this is a team that's only lost games to other kind of national championship-type contenders or top-ranked teams. I think A&M is pretty dangerous here, in other words. And I think this is a game that Georgia's got to be really careful of. What's your early impression of Texas A&M as Georgia gets ready to play them on Saturday?
Yeah, they've won four in a row, you know. And look, we know this. Teams change. You know, teams. I'm always amazed at people. You said back in February. Well, you know, a lot's happened in February to Georgia. You said a month ago, a lot has happened. Players get injured. I mean, Georgia without Ben Cleveland and Cade Mays and Lawrence Cager is a different Georgia team. They are. They absolutely are. Look at the difference between South Carolina when Georgia played them and the South Carolina team that Texas A&M played. That it just lost to Florida and Tennessee. So much of it is when you catch teams and how they're playing. And right now, Texas A&M's got momentum, and they feel good about themselves. It's a young team that's grown up and grown into the scheme with the $75 million coach. There's a reason Jimbo's there. You know, he's the biggest shark in the shark tank. And, you know, he's a guy that knows what Kirby Smart wants to do. They come from the same school and philosophy of thought. He knows what Kirby's going to do before Kirby does it. We saw Will Muschamp know exactly what Kirby was going to. You know, these guys, they think alike, and it's because they come from a similar background. Think about it. When you think about your friends from your hometown as you get older, and you go, "Man, we really get along." Well, yeah, no kidding. You grew up in the same world, and you have the same perspectives. And from a football standpoint, you know, I think that's very true with Jimbo and his staff. You know, Jimbo's doing some things a little different, BA, with this. Pro set offense, and Kirby said last night, it's almost like a wishbone when you consider how the quarterback can run the ball. So there's some challenging principles here and some tricks, you know, that the Georgia defense is going to have to stay responsible with. They've been very good, very thorough to this point. They've only given up one play longer than 30 yards since the second quarter of the South Carolina game. That's a lot of football. It's like 17 quarters or something. So the Georgia defense has done a great job. But A&M brings momentum. They bring a challenging scheme. They bring an experienced coach. And Georgia right now is absolutely limping to the finish line. The injuries are mounting. Five of their last six games came against teams that have had byes, which are more rested teams and more prepared teams. So this is a game of survival. If your team ends up with more points than A&M on the scoreboard, don't complain. Just survive this game and get to that awful, wretched Georgia Tech program. You just got to survive this one, and then all you got to do is show up the last week in Atlanta, and you'll beat Georgia Tech.
Well,
they'll roll over and die before kickoff.
Well, I definitely agree with you to the tune of this not being a, you know, beauty contest type game. It's just a game to win and move on from. And I think that beating Texas A&M presents its certainly its own challenge there in that regard. With that in mind, Mike, the issue with the Georgia offense continues to be kind of a hot topic. What's more significant to you, the fact that Georgia found an explosive play on Saturday, converted a couple trips in the red zone, including really a nice drive to close at the first half, or the fact that Georgia went 3 and out by my count, what, 9 times on Saturday? I believe that's the overall number. Which of those two storylines is more significant for you at the moment?
Yeah, and they were all gained 158-2 in the fourth quarter as well. The fact that Coley was able to show some twists. You know, that power eye formation, they scored twice out of that, once on the pass to Herring, on the other one, I believe. And then the other time they got down there, they had Eli Wolf, off of play action. I like that he was able to come up with some concepts and cash in on the red zone. Very important that they scored touchdowns and not field goals there. Very important. And so that shows you. I mean, it's not like James Coley doesn't understand offense. It's not like, you know, he can't draw up plays. But there are certain parameters that the head coach puts on him. You got to understand, a lot of this is Kirby Smart. And I said this earlier, a lot of people automatically put a negative connotation to conservative. But conservative is also smart, and there's no pun intended there, but conservative is what's kept Jake Fromm healthy while all these other quarterbacks are falling by the wayside. You know, Georgia's not worried about building a lead once they're up 35-7 and running the score up and running a guy around and exposing him to hits. They're running the football up the middle so the other team can't blitz their quarterback, so they can neutralize the pass rush, so they don't put their quarterback in position to get hit. Because Kirby Smart understands you got to have your quarterback standing at the end of the year to have a legit shot at winning a championship. You got to get to the finish line. Like I said, it's like NASCAR. It's like racing at Talladega. you got to survive those, you know, those first 190 laps. You got to be there for the finish, and that's what George is trying to do. They're trying to be there for the finish. So they've done a great job protecting Jake Fromm. When they get the lead, they know they've got a good defense, so they're not going to. They haven't turned the ball over since the South Carolina game. I mean, that's pretty amazing. And a lot of that is because of the conservative nature of the play calls. So, you know, you can't have one without the other. You know, you can say, oh, man, boy, Alabama scored all those points. Well, they did. But would you rather have Alabama's resume and roster right now or Georgia's? I think you would probably take Georgia's, B.A., because they've got a quarterback that's still healthy, right? So Kirby's managed this team in a way that for a third straight year, Georgia's 9-1 in college football playoff contention. He's made history, matching Steve Spurrier with three straight SEC crowns. So the critics that are out there, if they've got a resume that can match that, I'll gladly listen and consider that maybe they could do it better than Kirby Smart. But in my opinion, I think he has gone with the schemes that fit his talent and fit his, more importantly, fit his injury situation. So you asked me for A or B, and I'm going to give you C and tell you that the storyline is who's healthy enough to play on Saturday.
Well, along those lines, can we stipulate this? You know, you offer kind of a stark comparison between the current state of Georgia, the current state of Alabama, and I will admit that I've said on this show before that I believe that Alabama has swung too far in the direction of kind of a finesse brand of offense. They don't run the football as well as they used to, and they don't play defense as well as they used to. I think the commitment to the offensive side, the passing game for Alabama, has actually hurt the overall, I think, tone and tenor of the program. However, I do think there is a middle ground between what Alabama has become and what Georgia currently is. And I want to kind of, you know, I guess sort of step up and say that no one is saying, hey, the rest of the way, Georgia needs to become way more like Alabama. I think what the average fan would say is Georgia just needs to find a little bit more, just a little bit more offense.
Sure.
This has never been about, you know, 180 degrees the other direction. This has always been about take what it is you do well, run the football, play defense, sprinkle on a little more in addition to that, and Georgia very well could be a national champion. But if it's just what Georgia is now, there's a fear among some fans that's just not going to come true. So it's never been a stark choice between 180 degrees one way or the way that Georgia currently is. It's about just adding a little bit more to what Georgia currently brings to the table.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think we saw that at Florida. You know, I thought Florida was probably the best balance of offense and defense. And to this point, I would still say that's Georgia's best game of the season. I think so. I think they were even better against Florida than they were against Notre Dame. I thought they kind of petered out against Notre Dame there at the end. But I thought the Florida game, they finished well. You know, obviously, you know, Kirby made the decision on a 3rd-and-7 to throw it and convert a first down. And we saw the offense. But you know what's going to – but this is where I get back to who's healthy, because it was Lawrence Cager. And the Georgia offense is different when they got a guy out there that can get open and catch the ball. Imagine that. When you got a guy that can get open and catch the ball, what does it do for your offense? The problem is the other guys can't. The other guys can't. Now, but you can look, oh, well, I looked at the slow motion and I found this guy on the other side. Well, look, let's be realistic here. Can Jake Fromm at least have his primary target open 75% of the time? Because what Jake's not going to do, what he's not going to do is he's not going to turn the ball over. He's not going to force it. We saw that act before. We saw that at South Carolina, right? Can't go broke taking a profit. Well, if your profit can't catch the ball and it goes off his hands into a defensive back's hands, you just went broke. Or if your profit is Matt Landers and he turned you a long way in a route after 3 years, you just went broke again. Or if your profit doesn't come back for a football and the DB steps in front of him, then he's a freshman and you went broke again. So you don't blame Jake Fromm for not forcing it, B.A. That's my thought. I'm not saying you are. I'm speaking figuratively. Don't blame Jake Fromm and say, oh, you got to trust your receivers. No, you don't. No, you don't. There's a few on this team you absolutely shouldn't trust. And we saw that against South Carolina. Now, when Lawrence Cager's out there, I think the Georgia offense is fine and dandy. And I think if Lawrence is healthy, then Georgia will have plenty of offense to beat A&M and quite possibly LSU too.
Hey, Mike, thanks for being on the program. We'll look forward to reading a bunch more from you at DogNation.com in the days to come. And, of course, as I said before, it's great to have you here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort.
Great. Thanks, B.A.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, so let's transition now. Let's take a cruise around the SEC, courtesy of our friends of Royal Caribbean, as we do our SEC Through. And, by the way, speaking of Royal Caribbean, beautiful new amplified ship Oasis of the Seas, where you take a ship that many of you may have been on before, but you have not been on it like it is now. It's about to re-debut here this month, and it is, I mean, you don't talk about new and improved. This amplification process has been amazing, whether it be adding the Ultimate Abyss, which is the tallest water slide at sea. If you're watching a video, you got a chance to see that right now. That just seems amazing. Seems like so much fun. Boy, your kids would love that. Also, great things for the adults and really everybody else as well, including the Playmaker Sports Bar and Arcade, Music Hall, the Lyman Coconut, kind of some of those live music bar-type venues that really make it all fun. Bionic Bar, which is a robotic-type bar service thing. This is actually almost like a Star Wars thing. It's really pretty amazing. It's all there in the all-new Amplified Oasis of the Seas. You can find out more by going to RoyalCaribbean.com. I love to just kill time at the website, but it's also a great place to go to get in touch with a travel advisor and book your vacation, because I know you need one. It's RoyalCaribbean.com as we're cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean right now. Mike mentioned Alabama a moment ago. I'll kind of follow up on some of that myself. I think that the ESPN needed something to talk about on television, and so the last night Alabama became a hot topic during the playoff debate. But at number five right now, the way that Kirk Herbstreit described Alabama, I thought was pretty appropriate. They're kind of a placeholder. You don't really have anyone to put at five. You might as well put Alabama, because you're not going to vouch too much for Oregon or Utah yet, because one of those two teams hasn't beaten the other. And the fact that Oregon did lose neutral site to Auburn is a little bit of an anchor on its progress right now. Both these teams are on the road on Saturday. They're in Arizona. It is Utah, Arizona, and it's Oregon, Arizona State, I believe. I believe I've got the right matchups there on that. And so that'll be a chance for them to kind of prove themselves a bit more. But eventually, if those two teams keep winning, and the winner of the Pac-12, the one that beats the other, I think they're just going to move ahead of Alabama. And like the one thing that you hear talked about with Alabama a lot is, well, Alabama's got one more chance to send a message. With Mac Jones at quarterback going into Jordan-Hare Stadium and really hanging a number on Auburn, kind of citing the example of what Ohio State did in the 2014 Big Ten title game, things like that. Here's my opinion, and if I'm wrong about this, I'll take my medicine when it happens. But here's my clear opinion. Alabama is not good enough to blow out Auburn. They're just not. The last time that Alabama was in Jordan-Hare Stadium back in 2017, they lost the game. So Alabama's first charge against Auburn is to make sure you win. This idea that you're going to be, you know, able to, with a backup quarterback, coast in there, hang such an impressive score that you send a message to the committee, I don't think this Alabama team is good enough to do that. Now, do I expect them to beat Auburn with Mac Jones at quarterback? I probably do. But the idea that Alabama is going to just absolutely blow out Auburn, which would essentially put Gus Malzahn on the unemployment line, just given some of the rumblings kind of around the plains right now, I just don't think that I don't believe that level of play is available to this Alabama team right now. I don't. So that's my take on that, that if it takes a blowout in Jordan-Hare for Alabama to be back as an at-large team in the playoff discussion, I don't think it's going to happen. By the way, speaking of teams in the SEC West, and this is like the most Georgia story ever. So Michael Divinity, who's one of the better linebackers as part of LSU, really good pass rusher, left the team with what Orgeron is calling personal reasons, did not play against Alabama. Now, LSU still won the game, but miraculously, those personal issues that Divinity was dealing with, and I'm not making light of it because I have no idea what they are, but from a Georgia fan standpoint, I guess I am making light of the fact that he's back. He'll be, I guess, going through practice right now. We'll see how much he plays coming up pretty soon, but certainly the eye is towards having him ready and, you know, being a factor in the SEC championship game against Georgia. It's also fair to point out that LSU actually hasn't clinched the West yet. They'll have the formality of playing Arkansas on Saturday as a 40-plus point favorite, or as Reese Davis said on ESPN last night, a 9 million point favorite over Arkansas. But LSU does need that one to clinch the West. But it looks like they're getting Michael Divinity back here, which is a pretty big addition. Couple South Carolina stories, one good, one not so good. Marshawn Lloyd, the running back, the Gamecock commit, who we've talked about a lot on our program before, at DeMatha Catholic, a high school there in Maryland, which does not allow kind of first semester, senior year graduation, things like that. Marshawn Lloyd has announced that he's actually leaving DeMatha, the school where he played at, as a way of trying to graduate early so that he can get into South Carolina a little earlier. So kind of an interesting development here. Lloyd is one of those big-time recruits that South Carolina would not be getting if it didn't have Will Muschamp at coach. And I know it sounds like I'm sort of vouching and defending Muschamp. I guess in this regard, I am. Muschamp is a pretty good recruiter. And with everything being kind of a mess, the way they did it at South Carolina right now, it's important to note that a lot of folks wanted Lloyd in South Carolina, kind of quietly swoop in there and got him. And now they may even get him as an early enrollee as well, I guess. So kind of interesting news there involving Lloyd. But the bad side of all this is, do you remember yesterday we talked about the South Carolina president saying to a media outlet in the Palmetto State that South Carolina athletic director Ray Tanner had discussed with Florida State how they managed the buyout for Willie Taggart, which most people took as a way of saying, hey, maybe we could do the same thing and buy out Will Muschamp. The university president said he did not have that conversation, or at least he said that that Tanner did not have the conversation with the Florida State. Well, the news site, I believe it's SC News Now, I believe that's the name of the website, they have released the audio recording of the South Carolina president speaking on this same subject. The quote on the audio perfectly matches up the quote as they ran it. So what is it the kids like to say online about saving receipts? Apparently this news outlet saved their receipts, and all of a sudden this situation at South Carolina looks pretty messy. Not so much in terms of Will Muschamp's future, but the fact that the key power players here, university president, athletic director, maybe even football coach, they're not on the same page. This is not a good look for South Carolina. And, you know, frankly, I've made my case before that one way or another, continuity with Muschamp actually probably makes the most sense, just given the tough challenge of the schedule that Carolina's played this year and having to battle Clemson in state, Georgia at a time when it's, you know, better than it's been, and to say nothing of the fact that Muschamp actually won that game this year. So for now, we'll make that cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And I want to let you hear from Kirby Smart here on the subject of Texas A&M on Saturday. And listen, I am a firm believer this is a tough game. The point spread was higher than I expected to be. It was 13, 14 points, depending on when you've seen it this week. I thought the line might be a little lower than that. I just think that A&M's a pretty good team. And one of the things that makes A&M good is its quarterback, Kellen Mond. And when Smart spoke about Mond on Monday, I thought the way that he described the situation with Mond was actually pretty interesting. And if you are a longtime kind of student observer of college football, you know that his coach, Jimbo Fisher, has been doing this kind of stuff for a long time. Here is Kirby on Kellen Mond and the impact that Jimbo Fisher has had on him.
He has probably improved as much as a player from high school to now as any quarterback I've ever seen. I liken it to when Dak first went to Mississippi State and Dan took him and did all these really good things with him. Jimbo has really, I mean, this kid has a tremendous arm talent. We know the athlete he is. We know he can run, but that's not, you know, it's not like you say, well, this guy's a runner first. He's a really good passer. And the beauty of it is he plays in a pro-style offense and throws to some really good weapons and checks things, moves things around, but is extremely athletic. And when I say athletic, I don't mean like, oh, he's going to scramble for a first down. I mean, when he takes off running, he continues running. And there's guys out there that just can't catch him. And he doesn't always look to do that, but when he does, it's extremely dangerous. So it makes you play him a different kind of way. So we've got a tough charge in front of us.
So let me say it this way. Jimbo Fisher has worked with a lot of college quarterbacks that have ended up being first-round picks. Now, I have no idea what Kellen Mond's future in that regard is. But you think about, and you're going to laugh at some of these names, but it's the Jamarcus Russells of the world when he was offensive coordinator at LSU. It's E.J. Manuel and Jameis Winston. I guess Christian Ponder, I have to add him into that discussion there as well as an offensive coordinator. You know, this is a guy that's worked with a lot of quarterbacks that eventually became first-round picks. You say, well, none of those guys were good in the NFL. Winston's a starter. The rest of them, for the most part, kind of bust. Honestly, I don't think that matters. I mean, Jimbo kind of got them there and handed the baton off to the NFL, and what they did after that was kind of their own business. But there's no doubt that he has been a very successful QB tutor, and frankly, I think that's one of the most underrated aspects of him and his coaching pedigree. I've kind of joked with my audience about this before because we take comments and Twitter things, and you know, I hear from people a lot. I apparently think Jimbo Fisher is a lot better coach than a lot of people who listen to the show on a regular basis do. And I think that Jimbo's impact on Kellen Mond, one of the reasons why I think this is a tough game for Georgia on Saturday. A game that I expect Georgia to win, but it is unique for Georgia to be playing a ranked team that's not Auburn this late in the season. We're just not kind of used to seeing that. I think that's one of the reasons why Kirby has kind of talked up the game as much as he has. Let people know of, hey, don't be, you know, having visions of the SEC championship dancing around in your head, we got a big one to play on Saturday. Mond, the quarterback that Smart just mentioned, one of the reasons why it's a big game, and it's also one of the reasons why we're challenging Georgia fans to make it a great atmosphere, not just to honor the seniors who are playing their last game, the juniors who might be playing their last game, but because we think that it needs a big atmosphere to beat up on Texas A&M. So that whole hashtag best for last, your best for their last, we need a good atmosphere on Saturday at Sanford Stadium so that Georgia can do what it needs to do against Texas A&M. By the way, real quick, if you're watching on video, you see the Hover helmet on my desk. This is an amazing holiday gift item. It's a helmet that kind of floats suspended in midair. It spins around. It's the perfect addition to your office, to your man cave, your basement, whatever else you got. And it's a great holiday gift for that special person in your life, as well as our fight song music kind of gets cranked up here. It is a unbelievable option there for that. So go to the website. It is hoverhelmets.com/dognation. You can use the promo code dognation. That's hoverhelmets.com/dognation. You can use the promo code dognation. Also a real easy way to do this as well. You go to the website dognation.com and you can see that for yourself there today. It's at the dognation.com. You can find that for yourself, or hoverhelmets.com/dognation. When you use the promo code dognation, you'll get 20% off your order. All right, so we'll wrap up here today. A couple things to say before we go. First of all, basketball tonight, pretty fun game for Georgia against Georgia Tech. This is going to be a nice showing there at Stegman Coliseum. My understanding is there is a ton of NBA scouts expected to be in the building. I guess the first time for Anthony Edwards against kind of a living, breathing, real opponent. So a good chance to see that tonight. Georgia versus Georgia Tech, how the Ant-Man does in the in-state rivalry against Georgia Tech. That's going to be a lot of fun. Of course, plenty of Dog Nation, DogNation.com coverage of that. We'll talk about it a little more tomorrow on our program there as well. Something else we like talking about here for us is the Gator Hater Updater. It has now been 1,117 days since Florida's beaten Georgia. That's really good news, something we enjoy celebrating here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Y'all have a great day. Look forward to seeing you back here tomorrow, and we'll talk to you then.